Welcome to Urban Doctor, and it's the first show of the year. We want to say thank you so much for being with us throughout the year of 2023, and this is 2024. And this is the show where we talk about health matters, and today we're going to be shedding some light about, I don't know what to call it, a disease or, anyway, let me call it a tragedy. Would I call it a tragedy?
No, we'll call it an ailment or a disease. Yes,
okay, let's call it a disease. Okay. So we're going to be shedding light about a disease that has claimed lives of millions of women. And this is cervical cancer. Now, in the studio, I have our old friend here, Dr. Ndyanabanji Victoria, who always comes in, talks about different things. She was here talking about HIV just recently in December here. And here we are talking about cancers. Now, that is cervical cancer. Welcome, Dr. Victoria Ndyanabanji. How are you doing today?
Fine, thank you.
It's the first episode of the year.
Yes.
I hope you had a festive season that was...
It
was wonderful.
Yes, please.
Okay. So let's get into the issues here. Mm. Cervical cancer. We talk about this, even I think last year we kind of touched about it.
Mm.
Here we are. We're talking about it again.
Mm.
For the people who are tuning in for the first time, what is cervical cancer?
So cervical cancer is a disease that affects an organ. So as females, it affects females. Mm. So in our reproductive system, our birth system, we have the uterus where the baby sits, but we also have the opening of the uterus, which is what we call the cervix.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a condition where we have overgrowth of cells. And when there's overgrowth, we call that a tumor or a cancer. So it is overgrowth of cells of the cervix, which is the opening of the uterus.
When you say cells, what cells are we talking about? Yeah, okay. From a person who probably has not suffered from it there, and us like men who would want to educate more, what cells are these that grow?
And so it is the body cells, particularly of that organ, because each body part is made up of little units or blocks. Let me say, if you are building a house, now we're looking at bricks.
Mm-hmm.
So just think of it as bricks or building blocks of an organ. So this time we're talking about the cervix, which is the outlet of the uterus.
Okay. Are there particular causes for those excessive cells that come about? Which ones are those?
So we have noted through research that is a type of virus called human papilloma virus, which we commonly call HPV, has been identified as one of the biggest risk factors for developing that cancer.
Mm.
There are other risk factors, things like tobacco smoking, things like diabetes, things that would suppress the immune system that also could cause you to get cervical cancer, but the most common factor, and then HIV as well. So these two viruses, the HPV, human papilloma virus, and having HIV, are the two biggest risk factors that we have identified that predispose someone to getting cervical cancer. And then you add these other risk factors that I've mentioned, like tobacco smoking, taking alcohol, and other conditions that could suppress the immune system, including having had another cancer before.
You've talked about HPV.
Mm.
I can't pronounce the other one that you pronounced. How does someone get that HPV? And also, is it something that someone can prevent themselves from?
So HPV is sexually transmitted. So that means that you get it from somebody who has already been carrying it in their reproductive system. There are several types, but for cervical cancer, the two common types that cause risk are type 16 and 18.
Mm.
So if you sleep with someone who is carrying the virus and they pass it on to you, you could either become a carrier, meaning you just keep having it there, or your body, if the immune system is doing quite well, could actually fight off this HPV. So it is sexually transmitted. And HIV also as well, which is a risk factor, is sexually transmitted.
Oh, okay. Now I get some knowledge about HPV. Mm. Let's go back to cervical cancer here.
Mm.
Now, are there some symptoms or some signs that one could experiences, you know, to show that there is actually a risk that you have cancer, cervical cancer here.
Mm. So there are several risk factors, and women especially need to know about this, but also the men, because every man knows a woman out there who potentially could be at risk. So for the women, you need to have known your regular menstrual cycle. How many days do I normally bleed? The normal is supposed to be 5 to about 7 days. So if you have excessive bleeding, your days maybe were 3 and now they are a week, they are 10 days, that is one danger sign. Then if the fluid that we, as women, we have normally fluids in our canal. So if the fluid changes, either it develops a foul smell or it becomes blood stained, that is another sign. If you're having sexual intercourse and for some reason you keep having pain or you bleed after, that is another sign. The other sign also is if you have been in menopause, you stopped bleeding, and for some reason you start to see some staining or some bleeding, that's also another sign that could tell you, you know, things are not right. So those are the common symptoms, but also there are subtle symptoms like backache. Because our uterus and cervix lie against, or they are attached to the back. So if you have consistently back pain that just doesn't go, you have done everything, you're taking medication, and maybe you have that irregular bleeding, that's not the usual. You should now think, I need to have this checked out.
How long does it take for some people to develop, okay, not some, maybe how, maybe everyone, how long does it take for these signs to actually start to show, or cervical cancer to actually develop into what now can be felt until it's diagnosed?
The challenge is it's dependent on exposure, like I said, to the virus. So it's difficult for us to tell when were you exposed and then how long has it taken to get there. So the best thing is to actually make sure you go for your regular screening. So we encourage that whether or not you're HIV positive, at least once in 3 years, do the screening. If you can do it annually, well and good, but the recommended is at least once in 3 years, go and they check your cervix and they tell you whether it is okay or it is not okay. If you can do it annually, that's a bonus.
Okay. So what, from, are there stages? Because every time we hear cancer, we hear of stage 1, 2, up to 4. Are there stages in cervical cancer?
Yes, they
are. How severe is...
Yes, they are. So staging for cervical cancer is like all the other cancers. It's dependent on the extent of how far it has spread. So, and then there's also the precancerous stage. The beauty with screening is they can identify that your cells have started to change, what we call the precancerous stage, and that can be treated. So stage 1 is when it's just confined to the cervix. Yes, you have cervical cancer. They have identified through different investigations that it's only still in your cervix. So there they will do some local treatment, and it is done that day, and you actually go home. So they freeze the cells so that the cells stop changing. That is especially for the precancerous and stage 1. So they freeze the cells to a temperature that actually destroys those cells that have changed or have started to change. Then we have stage 2, where now beyond the cervix itself, it has started to penetrate the surrounding tissues, but it hasn't yet gone to other parts like the lymph nodes, that then there would say it is stage 3. Once we pick lymph nodes and we see that it has gone there, we're already at stage 3. Then stage 4, it has spread to distant organs away from the cervix. So yes, there is stage 1, there is stage 2, there is stage 3, and there is stage 4.
Which one of those is...
We usually don't want to go beyond stage 1. We want to get it when it's still confined to the cervix, because then the treatment modalities are easier and then the risk of a recurrence is actually very low. So we can treat you, we can do surgery and even take out the cervix and the uterus and then follow you up, and then we are comfortable that actually most likely the cancer will not recur.
Okay. That's quite interesting. You were talking about, I had you mention about testing, and I'll come to treatment. Are there different types of ways which they test cervical cancer?
So the easiest is their visual methods. So you can go to a reproductive health unit or to any hospital that has reproductive health services, women's hospitals, and they will do a simple test. They will use, there are two ways you can do it. They can do screening for HPV, and then they can use a dye to see whether your cells are starting to change. So they call it a VIA test. Mm-hmm. So they use reagents, including iodine, and they apply it to the cervix and see, is there any change? They apply acetic acid and iodine, see, is there any change in cells? And if it is normal, then they will tell you. But this is more so for those who are not getting into menopause. For those who are getting into menopause, they have to do what we call a pap smear test. And a pap smear test is they basically use a probe or a brush and get some cells from your cervix and put them on a slide and look at them. Why for the older ones do they do a pap smear test? Is because as you age and as you get closer to menopause and into menopause, your cervix sort of pulls back, what we call retracting. So that region where the cells usually start to change is not easily visible. So we want to make sure we position you well, pick as many cells from different areas in that region, put them on a slide and look at the cells and see, are these cells actually normal under a microscope?
Okay. Now that makes me wonder, because you're talking about people who are in menopause and those ones who are not in menopause. Does cervical cancer have an age bracket that attacks? Is there a stage where, or maybe an age where these people cannot get cervical cancer?
I would want to say that things have evolved over time, as we keep telling people. Yes, we used to have an age bracket where people were more prone. But unfortunately, with things like HIV now, we have people who have had childhood HIV from birth. So already by virtue of having HIV, they are at risk. And should they be sexually active and have never screened to see whether they have HPV or they have never been vaccinated for HPV, they are at risk as early as their sexual debut when they start to have sex. So we are seeing even younger people, because of these other risk factors, increase in use of cigarettes, put younger people at risk as early as 25 years of age. And so we have, we are saying anybody between the age of 25 and 65 could possibly get cervical cancer. That's not to say that those above 65 can't get, if they are also sexually active. They have HIV, they have all these other risk factors, they are at risk. So the common bracket is between 25 and 65, but that's not to say, I mean, if somebody started having sex before 25 and is having sex after 75, that they can't get it.
Okay. All right. So let's talk about treatment. Available treatments that are there on the market. Which ones are these for cervical cancer?
So like I mentioned, there's what we call cryotherapy for precancerous and early stage, where they basically freeze the cells. We have, we could use surgical interventions. We could say, you know what? Yes, we have identified you have cancer. It hasn't yet spread. Can we take out your uterus and cervix? And these are discussions you have with your gynecologist. So you have to look at several things. Am I still interested in having children? Am I not? What are my options? If it is treatable with other means that are non-surgical and you still want to have children, you could explore that. So it's a discussion. So there is cryotherapy, which is local. There is surgery, which means taking out the affected organs. There is chemotherapy, especially if it's stage 3 and 4, and radiotherapy as well, to arrest the cancer but also destroy the cancer cells. So those are the modalities that we have so far that are available. And if gotten early, it's one of these cancers that are treatable and you recover permanently. So that is why we need to speak about it, so that people are aware when they see these symptoms, they run, get screened. If it is there, we manage it early and you live a normal life.
You talked about the removing affected areas in the cervix. Mm. And then I heard you were talking about babies here, if you have hopes of having babies. So if just to be clear, that if you had cervical cancer and it's cured, you can still have babies?
Yes, you can. Especially if we used the local methods of treatment, meaning it was early, it was picked early. The chances are high. We've had people who have come, have been treated, they recover, and maybe a year or so after treatment, they say, I'm now ready to have my child. And they do get pregnant and conceive and have their babies.
But is there also a possibility that after treatment, you cannot have babies?
Mm. Especially now, for instance, if we, depending on the stage of the disease, we had to take out your uterus and cervix, you can't have babies.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is it transferable to the baby?
No, it's not. It's not.
All right. It got me thinking, okay, now where do we leave the babies in this picture here? Mm. Now, one could be out there and thinking, how equipped is Uganda in different hospitals in terms of treating cervical cancer?
I'd like to say government has done a lot. Almost all these government facilities under their obstetrics and gynecology departments have services for screening, they have services for treating. As long as they have an obstetrician, these discussions can be held and treatment can be given. Mm. The only challenge would be maybe if you need chemotherapy and radiotherapy. Not all government facilities have treatment centers for cancer, so they'd probably refer you, but they have a referral point. We have a referral system. So government has provided avenues. So Uganda is equipped for treatment. If not at that local facility where you've gone, at least the next level would probably be able to pick you up and handle.
Okay. Mm. I'm going to take you back a little bit. When you were talking about smoking, it sounded like there's a lifestyle element into this.
Mm.
What lifestyles can one adopt to prevent themselves from acquiring the virus or the cancer? Cancer is a virus, I'm sure. Yeah, okay. Lifestyles. And even after curing or even during when they have it, what kind of lifestyles should these people acquire?
Mm. So let's start. We said, first of all, the commonest risk factor is by getting exposed to the viruses that put you at risk. So sexual behavior. Mm-hmm. It is important that you have your one regular sexual partner, but condom use is also encouraged. So I know many people don't like condoms, but they protect us from some of these things, like we have seen over time. So adopting behavior change, have one regular sexual partner, use condoms whenever you possibly can, and then screen for HPV. Take your partner for screening. These are things that we don't think about when we get partners. And yet, we end up incurring a cost. You don't want to pay money to take your partner to the hospital for screening, and then you incur the cost of treatment and everything that goes with it. So habits like smoking and taking alcohol, as we've mentioned before, these substances are risk factors for almost all the cancers. So if you can avoid smoking, secondhand smoke, you know, you may not be smoking, but you keep going to a bar where people are smoking.
You become a passive smoker.
A passive smoker, which is also a big risk for you. So try and avoid some of these places. If someone next to you is smoking, move aside, take another seat elsewhere. Mm. So avoid smoking, avoid taking alcohol. Then the usual things that we talk about, exercise, maintain your weight, because like I mentioned, being overweight, it translates into some changes in your hormonal makeup in the body, and these hormones are known to trigger certain cancers. So try and avoid these things. Then if you've had a familial history of cancer, especially gynecological cancers, just know that you are at risk. So be the kind of person who regularly does their checks. If it's 3 years that you're supposed to go back and you've been given an appointment, do go back and have the check. You lose nothing. And it is free. That's the thing. Mm. You don't have to pay. Walk into a government facility. It is absolutely free. It takes a few minutes and you know whether you are okay or you are not okay.
Thank you so much, Dr. Victoria Ndyanabanji, for passing by and giving us some information on cervical cancer. I'm sure that I'll have you more a couple of times as it goes on there. Yeah. Now, our WhatsApp number there on the screen is 0755-7555. Send there your messages. When I get them, I'll definitely forward them to the doctor, and the doctor will be able to get in touch with you so that you can solve that issue. My name is Darren Butler, and we'll see you next time.